I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome. We're about to have a conversation with two people who experienced what happened in 1973 and beyond in Chile when the United States led a coup that overthrew the elected government, Salvador Allende, who was a socialist, who was close to the Marxists, and Nixon and the CIA and the other leaders of this country decided that he shouldn't be president of Chile, that they needed an ally and not someone who was going to nationalize industries and not someone who was going to, as he would say, stand up for the people of Chile. So he was overthrown, and that led to a military dictatorship of Augusto Pinochet that lasted for 3 decades.
17 years.
17 years, excuse me. It felt like 3 decades. 17 years. 17 years. People were killed, thousands killed, people tortured. And we are going to talk about that in the state of the world today with two people who lived through that from Chile. Pedro Alejandro Mata was a student leader at the law school at the University of Chile in Santiago during the coup d'etat at September 11, 1973. In 1991, he returned to Chile in order to research and document what happened at Villa Grimaldi, where he was held and others were held. Maria Estela Dabancén was a human rights activist, is a human rights activist, a bank professional, university student, and community organizer prior to and during the Salvador Allende presidency. During the military dictatorship, she was imprisoned, tortured, and then deported, and works now with the Woodrow Wilson Community Center, Spanish International Network, Pan American Health Organization, and the Chilean Environmental Commission. And Pedro Alejandro Mata, Maria Estela Dabancén, welcome. Good to have you in our studios.
Thank you
very much, Mark. Glad to be here.
Lovely to have you
Me
both.
Me too.
So if you were both, for our listeners, there are many people, you know, if you were born after a certain time, this means nothing, right? I mean, it's like it doesn't exist.
Exactly. I do understand that.
And even if you were born in that time, then many people don't understand what really that moment meant. Let's put it what it meant for that time and bring it to a historical context now. But Mr. Pedro and then Maria, talk a bit about what that moment was. What was 1973? What was going on and what happened?
Well, first of all, let me tell you that to me it's quite impressive being here during these days in the United States. And that is because we are commemorating here in the U.S. the 9/11. I was here in Washington, D.C. on the 9/11 of 2001.
Oh, really?
Oh, yes. I was attending a academic conference that was held prior to that tragic date, the prior week. And certainly the attacks on the planes from the Twin Towers, on the Pentagon, the plane crashing in Pennsylvania, certainly brought to me the memories of the 11th of September of 1973, where other planes attacked the governmental palace of La Moneda and started a period that probably is one of the darkest in Latin American history. It's very hard to explain to American people how do you feel when you are prosecuted, when you are persecuted because of political reasons. I was a member of the Socialist Youth at the time. Something was completely legal, constitutionally, and certainly in a democracy, all points of view are represented. I was one of member of the Socialist Youth. Many of my friends today that were fellow students at the law school are today disappeared. Some of them were killed. And certainly that's just a bit of an example of a wider repression that affected all the Chilean people, thousands of students, thousands of peasants, thousands of workers. So during this conversation, probably we will be able to get deeper into this, but certainly I would like Maria Estela to stand her point of view from her standpoint, political view at the time, and her place in society at the time.
1970 caught me with 1 year less to being able to vote. At that time, we had to be 21 years old to be able to vote in Chile. I was 20. But I supported Salvador Allende, of course. And I was very happy when he won, though he didn't get the majority and had to go through congressional sessions and congressional approval. Followed his government quite much. I was a student, but I had studied before, and I was sort of complementing my studies, studying geography. And I lived as a student and also as an employee of a bank a very intense period, especially because he nationalized banks.
Allende did,
mm-hmm. as a president. The bank I was working for became a state bank. And I remember the owner of the bank coming inside the bank saying, "You don't know what's going to come. You don't know," like that. And we were happy. It was very interesting because at the bank, I became a member of the trade union, of the union of the bank, and we would meet with the management to decide who would get a loan or not.
Hmm.
That was
a democratic procedures at the bank.
Impressive. Second, that at school, we were very rebel.
Rebellious.
Rebellious,
yeah.
And so I had the two things going on. And at home, everybody in my family was against Allende. So it was a very intense moment. Until 1973, at the coup, I was precisely residing at a hill, but from where I saw the bombardment of the Moneda Palace.
Which is the presidential palace.
Exactly. So I saw the fumes, the fire, and the last speech of the president, together with a lot of people crying to listen to his last words.
May I add something to what
Maria
Stella just said? Maria Stella's words brought to me my memory of the night in which Allende won the presidency. Mm-hmm. This was the 4th of September of 1973. I am part of a well-to-do family in Santiago. My father was a dentist. We live in a very nice neighborhood in the east part of the city. And I was the only one in my family with progressive thinker at the time. A very young guy.
Both of you.
A student. And in a very conservative family. So the evening when the result of that elections became known, certainly, I felt extremely happy, and certainly the rest of my family was something that you could see the fear, the concern, and certainly the distance of what was going on in downtown Santiago. In downtown Santiago, the radio said people start congregating to celebrate the triumph of then-elected Presidente Allende. So I walked out of my house. I went to a nearby house where my close friend in the neighborhood was, another young guy about my same age, and with the same progressive spirit. And we decided to go to downtown Santiago. So we walked through our neighborhood, a neighborhood that was completely dark. Completely silence. Everybody there, or most of the people there, were conservatives. So we walked through a neighborhood that was like a tomb. We walked a couple of blocks away to get to a nearby bus stop and tried to get something to take us from there to downtown Santiago. And there are almost no transport, only private vehicles, cars, very seldom you could see on the street. And finally we spotted this old bus coming from the neighborhood in the upper part of the foothills of the Andes, where Villa La Reina stood. Villa La Reina was one of the few popular areas in that part of Santiago. And we spot that bus advancing through the evening with a bus that couldn't see because it was full of people, not only inside the bus, but people hanging from the windows, hanging from every element that could be support a human body. And we desperately tried to stop the bus to get some place. So the driver stopped the bus, let us climb into any, and we continue going to downtown Santiago. And we pass other neighborhoods in silence. The people in the bus were chanting, were singing, were embracing each other, the one that could have space. And finally, we got to close to the Alameda, the main thoroughfare in Santiago, where people start congregating. And at that point, the bus driver stopped the bus, closed the bus, let the people out, and he joined everybody in the bus to go to the Alameda to celebrate. And there was a party in Alameda that was unbelievable, unforgettable. Mm-hmm. There were hundreds of thousands of people coming from every neighborhood of Santiago, joining in singing, in playing guitar, in dancing on the street. And by hour, more and more and more people started coming in. And I was lucky to get to a place where Presidente Allende picked for the first time after the election the balcons of the Federación de Estudiantes de Chile, the largest, the most important university student federation in Chile. And from them, there Allende called the Chilean people, the Santiaguinos, to celebrate, but at the same time to be aware that the days in front of us would be the days not only of celebrating, but the days of responsibility, that we will have a very long and hard road in front of us. So to celebrate tonight, but to be aware that the days in the future is going to be hard and hardworking. That's my remembrance of that day. And thank you to Maria Stella for bringing that memory to me.
So to reiterate for our listeners, we're talking about what happened on September 11th, 1973, another September 11th, when Salvador Allende was overthrown by the American government, by the CIA, by, for want of a better term, capitalist interests in Chile and the United States to throw out the duly elected president of Chile. That led to 17 years of military dictatorship under Augusto Pinochet. And so there was this great hope when Salvador Allende was elected from many people, but working people, students who wanted to saw a new society maybe being built. And he was elected. This is a democracy. Chile, again, once again, is a democracy, but it was a democracy at that point. And so, but at that moment, when he was overthrown, let's pick it up at that moment. I mean, this is a moment, A, that must have terrified all of you to see the military come in and take over the country. And then subsequently, at different times, you were both arrested, both tortured, and were victims of what happened there. So, I mean, I think Americans don't understand what can happen and how it can happen. I don't want to have to get into personal details. You don't have to say anything you don't want to say. But I'm just curious to talk about if you can give the people here in the United States a sense of what that was, what happened, what was like.
First of all, as we remembered yesterday with Pedro, immediately there was a curfew established for 2 days. Nobody could move away from where the coup found them. There's people that had to stay in their jobs or at home. I think that immediately was a call of a very strange situation that would come that wasn't easy, and it was violent. Second, I think that we have to mention that people sought asylum in embassies, officials, etc. And I know that Pedro and I didn't seek asylum. We decided that there was something to be done against this brutal dictatorship that was coming. And I don't know, I don't remember being very well organized fighting against the military, but just, for instance, I was thrown out of my job a week later, and the way I was thrown out of my job was, you have to resign. I said, I'm not resigning. You're firing me. So I became unemployed. I was arrested 3 times before the real one.
For
the
real
last one. Yeah, 3 times. I have a dad that used to be a Navy commander, retired already, but I know he moved some names and influences to try to find me on those occasions. The last occasion, though, it was I was arrested in 74, and it took him a long time to find me. I think that I owe him, in a certain way, the fact that I am alive. But to just let you know that from September 73 until January 75 that I was thrown out of the country was, what, 2 years of very intense life. Not productive. I don't remember having a job, being paid, but having to survive, be able that we were knowing what was going on and helping whenever we could, move somebody to an embassy, get somebody on his way to the airport, little things like that to save lives.
Pedro.
I remember the day of the coup d'etat. I overslept. It was a very, very tired day the day before. I had a meeting with law students, and I came back very late at night, probably in the wee hours of the morning. So the following day, somehow, I overslept. So I woke up at about 8:30, and immediately I felt much concerned because I was going to come late to my classes. So I immediately ran to the bathroom to take a shower, put on my clothes, and then I was flying back the stairs, and I saw my family, my father, my mother, in the living room. They had a bottle of champagne. And my father told me, "Your president, your president is finished." And that was my first news about the coup d'etat. So I gathered some information and immediately ran out of my house. And my intention was to get to the law school. That was my meeting point with my fellow students, my friends, my compañeros. So I walked. There was no public transport in Santiago at that point. So I started walking from my neighborhood in the east part of the city to downtown Santiago and to the law school. And I remember crossing in my way poor people coming back to the poor neighborhoods in the outskirts of the city. They looked sad, they looked defeated. I remember crossing in front of some very elegant buildings in some of those areas, in some areas of well-to-do Santiago. And the same as my parents, with bottles of champagne in balcons and walking through those streets of Santiago, remembering helicopters flying over with machine guns pointing down. And finally, I couldn't get to the law school because that part, that area of Santiago, was enclosed by military, and I couldn't get to there. So at that point, I decided to walk to La Moneda, because probably at La Moneda I would be useful to defend the constitutional government. And at one point, an army patrol stopped me and told me I couldn't get closer to La Moneda. I was, at that point, maybe about 8-10 blocks away, and told me that there would be a curfew in Santiago in about half an hour. So I had to seek some place to go. So at that point, I went to an apartment where a friend of mine, a student from the dental school, lived. And I spent the next days in that apartment listening to the radio, listening to the military bands, listening to the helicopters flying day and night, listening to the shots that you could hear in the city around. That's my remembrance of the day of the coup d'etat.
But in the days and years that went past that, I mean, I think that many people who you know and yourselves were tortured, were killed, disappeared. A dictatorship took over. Now, many people in the West would say it was a wonderful thing because the economy grew, they would say. We can talk about that in a minute or two. But that this was a period when a lot of people died. A lot of people were tortured. And that's another thing that I think we don't think about. The same thing like in Argentina, they disappeared. People just disappeared. Friends of yours disappeared. You almost disappeared.
Well, in fact, we did disappear.
Yeah, we did.
Every political prisoner disappeared in Chile.
Mm-hmm.
The difference is some of us reappear again.
Right.
Some others didn't.
In my case, I was a disappeared person for my family from November the 2nd, 74, until January the 8th, 75. That is 3 months. There were witnesses that I had been taken from a house, machine guns, into a car, and that was it. Never again to see me. The person that did all the work of finding me was my dad. Went from prison to the Secretary of Interior, to the Vice Presidency, to the Armed Forces, to the police. And until suddenly, my name appeared. And he says that it was a matter of 4 to 5 days in which he received a note saying, she is in our custody, is either sent to jail or outside of the country. My dad said, outside of the country. And in 2 days, I was put in at the airport in a car and taken over to a plane and out.
Where'd you go?
To Colombia, where my family had found a relative that would be able to receive me. And I got to Colombia after being blindfolded and roped for 3 months. I remember couldn't take the sunlight. I was walking like zombie, thin. And of course, I had been tortured. So it was a very strange situation being there. And it wasn't for a long time because I was invited to follow another step.
Many people hear the word torture and they don't even know how people survive that, the idea of it. Because unless you've experienced it, you can't even begin to think about what that
torture,
means.
To survive torture is something aleatory. You don't know if you are going to survive or not. In fact, torture at some point leads you to wish to be dead. I remember sometime during those days after my detention by DINA, Pinochet secret police, in my first torture center, because I went to a second, and later to a third one, wishing I could have the power to stop the beat of my heart. But in the following weeks after the coup d'etat, one of my main tasks was trying to find what happened with my friends, with my compañeros, with the socialists at the law school, trying to find who had been arrested. At that point, we didn't use the word disappear,
mm-hmm.
because it was out of our minds that somebody could disappear. But in fact, that was happen. After a person was arrested, usually lawyers, family members or friends went to the courts. At the courts, they asked for habeas corpus. The order of from a justice magistrate to bring that person in front to check how was his physical shape. But that didn't work in Chile after the coup d'etat. habeas corpus was in existence. The court didn't allow and didn't ask those prisoners to be brought in front. So the authorities, the military authorities, could do whatever they wanted with the prisoners, male and female. And in my case, as I said, I was taken to a first torture center. I have a very, very blur idea of what, how many days I was there. It's the center where I wanted my days to stop. I wanted to be, to have the power to stop my heartbeat. I remember, the next thing I remember is having been in a semi-conscious state to be put in a something that called, that was, appeared to me like a niche where you put a body.
Like a coffin?
Mm. Yes. And I said at that time, oh, well, good. That meant torture is finished. They are what allowed me to die. Mm. And that night was not a night. It's the men's cells at Villa Grimaldi. These were...
They were that small. Mm-hmm. The cells were that small.
Absolutely. They were small and dark. Mm-hmm. So my torture continued at that point on. But that was my remembrance. I was put in a night, so they are going to allow me to be dead. Oh, that's great, because my torture had been ended.
What were you going to say, something, Maria? What the torture that you and others received in the imprisonment, was it
different kind of torture? Mm-hmm. First of all, the application of electricity, different parts of the body. Hanging. In my case, hanging with my hands tied in the back. Dina called that the paloma, the dove. And then they hang you and they torture you. So, you know, the first thing you remember is the dislocation of one of your shoulders. Because being hung in that position and applied torture meant the dislocation, the luxation of one of your shoulders. Until today, I have very serious injuries in my left shoulder. The immersion of your head in liquids, the wet submarine, the telephone, the application of blows into your ear papillons. There are many, 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 and certainly Maria Stella can tell you.
And these things they did not to get information, but just to torture.
No, the torture meant three things. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Three things. First of all, to get information. What information they were looking for? The identification of other people that would be connected to the person being tortured. And having that information, then those people would be sick, arrested, and brought to the torture center, and it would end up in a never-ending chain. Second objective, to destroy the person being tortured. That was an enemy from the military standpoint, and from the soldier's point of view, they have to destroy the enemy. Third objective, when that person being tortured was recognized as a political prisoner and reappear again in a public detention center, that person would be held for some time, months, years, depending on every case, and at some point that person would be either expelled from the country, like Maria Stella, mm-hmm. or released into the country. And that would be a zombie that would go back to society. And then that zombie, added to many other zombies in the same condition, prisoners to be released, would join society, and society would be maintained in a terrorized state. That state terrorism, so that's the third objective, to terrorize society, because a terrorized society is much more easy to manage, to handle, and to accept orders coming from above.
Pedro Alejandro Mata, Maria Estela Dabansan, two people who experienced what happened in 1973 and beyond in Chile when the United States led a coup that overthrew the elected government, Salvador Allende. We'll take a very brief break and come right back. The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by Urbanite Magazine's new e-zines, where you can get your weekly fix of arts and culture, food and drink, home and design, style and shopping, and green and sustainable topics. Updated information can be delivered to your inbox. Registration is available at urbanitebaltimore.com. The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union. Offering a full range of financial services, MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. For more information, www.mecu.com. I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome back. Pedro Alejandro Mata was a student leader at the law school at the University of Chile in Santiago during the coup d'etat at September 11, 1973. In 1991, he returned to Chile in order to research and document what happened at Villa Grimaldi, where he was held and others were held. Maria Estela Dabansan is a human rights activist, a bank professional, university student, and community organizer prior to and during the Salvador Allende presidency. Two people who experienced what happened in 1973 and beyond in Chile when the United States led a coup that overthrew the elected government, Salvador Allende. And then Augusto Pinochet was head of the junta until 1980, right?
1990.
Sorry, the dates are not all clear in my head. I apologize.
That's fine, Mark.
He actually never went to jail for the crimes he's committed.
You are right.
And has anybody gone to jail for the crimes committed to Chile or the Chileans?
Oh, no. There are some people sent to jails. In fact, we have a statistic. We know today that there were more than 750 torture centers during the Pinochet years.
750 torture centers?
Yes. That's the official count, what we know. Probably there are some others that we still don't know. But out of those more than 750 torture centers, we have today here in Chile only 81 people sent to jails because of violation of human rights. Murder, assassinations, disappearance. No people has been sent in Chile to jail because of torture or because of rape. That's impunity.
So talk a bit about why you went back, why you're there, why you went back. Because you left the country for a long time.
Well,
you did not go back.
In my case, I came to the United States and spent 20 years here, and I got a job in Chile through the UN. And it was a nice project, and it was a nice way of going back, protected with a job, you know. So I got there, and it was also an important moment for my daughter.
What year was that?
That was in 94.
So the junta had just recently been...
It had left. We were already in the second presidency after Pinochet. After Pinochet came Elwin, and after Elwin... Frey. And that's when I got to Chile. And good moment to let my daughter know the country of her mom and the family of her mom. We spent there 5 years. She went to high school in Chile. And it was in the middle of this concertación that is what followed the dictatorship for 20 years. I have many things to say. And one of the most important ones is that maybe things happened, changed a little bit from Pinochet times, but the basic, most important things that should have changed, like the constitution that he wrote, by which we all abide, was never altered, never changed. So I spent those 5 years there, came back, not to the United States, but to the Dominican Republic, where I have my husband and We've been there for 12 years. So I went back to Chile, but I am no longer in Chile.
But Pedro, you are in Chile.
I am in Chile. I spent 15 years of my life in this country. I came to the United States, to New York City, as a political refugee a few days before the bicentennial celebration of 1976. I spent 15 years of my life here, first in New York City, then in San Francisco, California, and then back in 1981 I came back to Chile. And I have been a researcher investigating torture centers and disability centers in Chile from that time on. That has been my main task after coming back to Santiago, particularly Villa Grimaldi, the most important torture and disability center in Chile. And certainly I've been working also with particularly American students going to Santiago.
So now, when we think of what's happened and what the work you're doing is Villa Grimaldi, right? Is the torture center you were?
Yes.
You were held there?
I was.
You were
Me
held,
too.
You were both held there?
Yes.
As one of the main torture centers under this regime. So I'm curious what, at this point in your lives, what you think that moment says to the world. You know, we have all these things. You think that, you know, you go through the people go through the Holocaust. Well, it'll never happen again. Of mm-hmm. course, it happens again. Mm-hmm. You know, that people are tortured and killed, in whether it's in Guatemala or Argentina or mm-hmm. Chile or any other part of the world, or the United States of America, for that matter. Mm-hmm. And so I wonder, after experiencing all you experienced, from the hope of Allende bringing a new light to the world and to Chile as president and being overthrown and killed, and, you know, he stood and died at the end. They like to say he committed suicide. They say he fought to the end and died. Whatever, he died at the end in the presidential palace holding a gun. That through your torture, what all this says to you? What does it say to the world about where we are now, about what we should be doing, and what this example says to us?
In first place, I have to remember that we still have torture centers in the world, and one of the most important ones is Guantanamo, that the president said would close, and nothing has happened yet. In my case, I am completely against violation of human rights wherever they take place. And that is a stand that one gets to after being a person that went through that. Second, I understand that in Chile we still have a way to go, and I'm very confident that I see a new generation that are the students on the streets and fighting the system that has been still, since Pinochet years, ruling the Chilean people. Poverty, discrimination, poor schools, no hope for a better life. So I am confident that we will be able to achieve that. And also, I think that we still have an important movement around the world that has to be conserved, that is the solidarity that we found here, that moved us to do different things in Chile, that moved us from here to do things in El Salvador, in Nicaragua, in Guatemala. We knew places through the work of people together, and that is muy importante.
Pedro?
Well, a friend of mine, another political prisoner, said something that deeply impacted me once, and I felt completely represented for what he says. He said once, well, you know, after our detention, after the day of our detention, we have our life for free. Yeah. And coming from that, considering that, then we should make the best of that free lifetime frame. So in my case, I dedicated to this. I've been trying to help to build a memorial site, and many memorial sites in Chile, in this case Villa Grimaldi, but to convert memory in a building block of the future. Through memory, we will need to rebuild our democracy, to rebuild our sense of values, our ethics, our politics, our society. And that building block has to illuminate our life, the future, not only for Chileans, but to share our experience abroad. In my case, coming to the United States, sharing our experience, our views, our with American students, with American people. So, Mark, to me, it's an honor to be here, that you allow me to speak to the American people through these radio waves. And certainly, it's not only an honor, but it's a privilege. And that is my feeling today. It's just to add a little grain of sand in trying to build, from our own perspective, from our own experience, a better world. And that's a task for the whole society. I want to be that part of that effort.
I think, and it seems it's important, I mean, that we come to grips with what has happened. We're talking about something that happened barely 40 years ago.
38 yeah. years ago.
Yeah. Not even 40 years ago.
No.
Mm-hmm. And that nobody at that, I would assume that when you were young and in Chile, when the coup happened and threw out the government and put you all in prison, you didn't think that was going to happen. You were living in a democracy. You're living in a place with a free press, with an elected government. Sometimes the conservatives won, this time the left won, and they were remolding Chile. But you had no idea this was happening. That's the point I think is important for Americans and anybody living in a Western democracy to hear. We're not talking about a developing country that has been living in dictatorship. We're talking about a democracy where this happened. Americans should listen to that.
I want to leave this for Pedro to say, but I am very interested in saying that during those 3 years, the president and his government even got more support from the people. He went twice to elections, and he got more votes. I mean, his support grew. Remember that when he was elected, he didn't have the 50% plus one vote.
Right.
He had to go through Congress. Forget it. In the last parliamentary election, he was overwhelming. So we know that what you said is that we never thought that a coup would come. We were alert of what the situation was around and inside the country. But the president had won more support than when he started.
Well, probably Allende represents a dream for many Latin Americans at the time. In fact, according to Mr. Kissinger's words, Allende represented more danger for the American interest in Latin America than Cuba at the time, because Allende opened a road through elections, through democratic elections. And that was, according to Mr. Kissinger and certainly to Mr. Nixon's view, a much more danger to American interests than the Cuban road to socialism.
Because you can send an army in to fight a revolution, but it's hard to fight it when you're fighting a democracy.
Absolutely.
And they're actually winning.
Absolutely. Yes. Absolutely.
Right.
Very well said.
So the coup d'etat put an end not only to our dream, but to the dreams of many Latin Americans at the time, and certainly closed not only democracy in Chile, but put in stone to democracy in many, many countries in Latin America. Chile was not an exception at the time, was not isolated. With the coup in Chile, it became dictatorship very quick thereafter. Argentina, Uruguay, Paraguay, Brazil, Bolivia. It was what we called at the time Operación Cóndor, the coordination of all this dictatorship, to make a battleground against democratic forces inside, and then also to kill democratic and progressive thinkers all over that area. We still do not know how many people were killed, disappeared, because of Operación Cóndor. But one of the major figures, one of the major victims of Operación Cóndor was killed here in this city, in Washington, D.C., on the 21st September of 1976. Orlando Letelier, former ambassador to United States from Chile, former Minister of Defense of President Allende, former Minister of Foreign Relations of President Allende, was killed here by a group of goons sent by Pinochet here to Washington. The first terrorist act conducted in Washington, D.C., the capital of the United States, by a supposedly friendly nation. At that point, the Pinochet regime.
They blew up his car and killed him.
Yes. 35 years ago.
35 years ago. I remember that very well. And you, the wonderful thing is, the interesting thing and wonderful thing is, that the two of you, after living through what you lived through, the torture you lived through, the imprisonment, the struggle to survive, you both still seem to have a personal and political and human
commitment
hope
to build a better world.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. I was thinking now that Pedro was describing how Kissinger was concerned that the Allende's election and victory would bring around the continent all of these other countries finding the same alternative, and we would call it the domino theory, that they would all fall. Guess what? Allende was killed, and Kissinger's domino theory prevailed. All of the countries around Chile became dictatorships. So who used the domino theory, Allende or Kissinger?
And when we say Kissinger, we must put things where they belong in some ways. When we say Henry Kissinger, Secretary of State under President Nixon, we're talking about the United States of America. We're not just talking about Kissinger.
Absolutely.
Kissinger didn't act alone.
Absolutely.
This was an American move to do this.
It's because for us was like the main character.
Right.
And also remember
right.
that Chilean business and United States businesses in Chile found him as the best interlocutor to complain and to this disgrace that was coming to the ITT, to the Kennecott, to Guggenheim, and to all these people that were supposedly losing their interests in Chile. He was the one that would receive all those complaints.
Right, right. So, but you continue to believe in struggle, whether it's at home in your home country of Chile or around the world, that we can, that people can prevail, it can be a planet for human beings, even though the sense of torturers and people who do that are pervasive.
Well, first of all, let me say thank you to you and the wonderful work that you're doing, because public radio is informing, alert, and in some sort of way moves people in this country to get to know what's going on around. You don't get that from the main media here. I mean, they all say the same. You guys are alternative, and you are very important. So you are just like us, believing that there's a better world and working for it.
I don't want to add anything else. I join completely Maria Stella's words. Thank you, Mark.
Thank you so much.
It's been an honor to have you all with us and to have you in these studios. I think that, as I said earlier, before we leave, I think that it's important to think about, and I'm not that I am paranoid, but I am also a realist about life and history and the history of the world, and you see what happens in the world. That emphasizing again and again that just because you live in a democracy, what you think is a democracy, you shouldn't be comfortable with that. You shouldn't not expect that anything could happen, that you have to be very vigilant and defend what you have. And given how America in some ways is falling apart internally in many ways. And you see the schism in this country and a military force that's no longer a draft force but is a solely professional army, that there are a lot of things for us to watch out for. This is not – there's no guarantee that democracy lasts.
Not at all. And I, again, reiterate the wonderful work that you do, because you are informing and you have a real point of view. A real point of view that is helpful in organizing, in knowing, and being alert, in solidarizing. Those are the things that public radio does for all of the United States people. We need that everywhere. I mean, we in Chile, Pedro and I listen to radios and we read newspapers that are not the ones on big demand, because they are not telling the truth.
Right.
Or there's a trend that they follow dutifully, you know?
Once again, this has been an honor to have you all in our studios here. I've been looking forward to this. When they said you were coming, I was looking forward to meeting you both and having you here. Maria Estela Davancen.
Thank you so
in
much.
Our studios, Pedro Alejandro Mata. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mark.
And everybody can check on our website, steinershow.org. We'll have links to all their work and what's going on, and links to the history of Chile and to this coup, so you can see for yourselves, to keep our democracy safe. These are lessons from another country to us about what we have to be vigilant about, and also about their story of survival and hope and building a better world. So Pedro and Maria Estela, muchas gracias.
Thank you.
The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Justin Levy and Christina Arison. Our theme music is by Wal Matthews of Clean Cuts. To hear this show again, podcast any of our past shows, hear additional interviews, please visit us on the web at steinershow.org. And for Public Radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. I'm Mark Steiner. Take care. Tiene sentido y razón. Tiene corazón de tierra y alas de palomita. Es como el agua bendita, santigua gloria si veas. Aquí se encajó mi canto, como dijera Violeta. Guitarra trabajadora, con olor a primavera. Que no es guitarra de rico, cosa que se parezca.